Welcome to this week's 2 Men in the Middle. This is where 2 men in the middle of the country get together and talk about politics, current affairs, and other fun stuff. I'm Craig Huey.
I'm Brandon Koenig.
Brandon, we've been off for a couple weeks because of some travel and some other stuff that where you're an amateur podcaster. Trips to San Diego definitely take precedent over your amateur podcast.
Oh, absolutely. A little bit of a hiatus there. San Diego was sunny and beautiful, and it was difficult coming back to Kansas City because the weather was perfect, and it was just, I could live out there. So nice.
And you, did you come back and land like in the middle of the oppressive heat? Because Jode was in L.A. this week.
I did.
Yeah.
And it was eye-opening because every day out there was like 75 to 78 degrees with no humidity. Like literally perfect weather. It's a type of weather where it's like, I want to eat on a patio every day and find like, when they go to a restaurant inside or outside, you're like, oh, outside, definitely. And then I get back here. And then as soon as I get outside of KCI, it just, the humidity overwhelms you and it's almost suffocating. And you're like, why did I come back?
Could you see like Wednesday or Thursday of this week trying to sit outside and eat a meal?
Oh, not at all. I mean, it's just so brutal.
I was trying to sit outside on my deck like on Thursday night and my glasses kept steaming up. There was so much humidity in the air and it was just so disgustingly hot.
And again, I'm a lifelong Kansas Cityan, but it's another reason why like I bag on our weather because we have the extremes in the winter and the summer and it just drives me up the wall. I would love to be somewhere where you just have that consistently nice weather through much of the year and expectations are set and it's so easy.
I'm with you on all of that. It's the $2,000 property tax bill we have on our house that offsets some of that. Right. It's the fact that you can buy a house here and you could pay that house off and you could build that asset. There's a reason why prices in San Diego are what they are because it's 76 and sunny every single
day
of the year.
That hasn't stopped me from checking out condo prices, though, in some areas outside of San Diego and more kind of inland.
It's one of the favorite games we used to play with the kids once they got a little older on vacation. Mostly our daughter. You'd see that sign for like seaside condos, you know, like open now. Yeah. And my daughter's always like, how much does that cost? I'm like, well, Google it and find out. And she'd be in the back of the car and she's like, you know, is $7,500 for a 900 square feet apartment a lot? Yeah, honey, that's basically your room. Basically is what that is. So
yeah, I'm partial to, I have friends that live out in the desert Coachella Valley area, which gets extremely hot like 2 months in the summer. Yeah. But then the other 10 months of the year, like it's perfect temperatures. Like I could handle that and just like flee for the, you know, 2 months.
Yeah.
And those prices are reasonable compared to the coastal area. It's like, they're not like insane. They're higher than here, but they're not crazy high where it would be, you know, a barrier to ever moving out there. So that's appealing. Yeah.
I mean, I would almost rather continue talking about weather in San Diego and California than the agenda we put together, which is, I guess we're going to spend half our time talking about the upcoming COVID Delta wave and what that means locally here in Missouri and to the country.
And the other aspect of that is the inability to have a coherent, concise messaging around that. Yeah. And the fact that we're still in this time loop where the messaging is chaotic, it's confusing. And again, and I expect that the media is going to pile on the doom and gloom and, you know, scaring that, oh, this is serious, we got to do this. But the data and the details behind the data is often lost in the headlines and the sound bites. And that's what's frustrating to me, because I think in many ways it is eroding confidence in the vaccines and it's causing those who are already vaccine skeptics to just, I think, dig in. And their viewpoints.
And I think we talked about in the beginning of this pandemic, everybody, most people were willing to give the government the benefit of the doubt. Hey, we're in a spot we've never been before. This is a virus. This is evolving. Data is going to change. Information is going to change. There are things going to go wrong. That's just part of this process. And I think with Trump, the Trump administration was a lack of information and data.
Completely. Void.
Just downplay it. Because everybody knew, even Trump knew, this was his kryptonite.
Yeah.
This is the reason why you don't elect the reality TV star to be president, is because eventually something really serious comes along that you need real presidential leadership. And Trump knew that. So what they did, their whole thing was downplay, starting with 2 weeks to stop the curve, and this is going to go away by Easter. And if you remember back to all of that bullshit, we all kind of knew that it wasn't going to go that way. Right. But because we really didn't know what was going to happen, we kind of accepted some of that. And then I think when Biden got in, well, that was Trump's downfall, not addressing this seriously enough, not giving out direction and information. That kind of
downplayed at every turn. I mean, all even the time. To the, giving out misinformation about treatments like hydroxychloroquine. I mean, it was just nonstop as the case numbers were piling up and case fatality rates were increasing.
And I think you would agree with me that the biggest single line item in Biden's victory over Trump was Trump's response to COVID.
Yes.
And without COVID, Trump had a better than 50% chance to be elected.
Oh, yeah.
Just simply because the power of incumbency when you're talking
completely.
About
and
the
he
president.
Could not have screwed COVID up
any more
than he did.
So Biden comes in, and part of his speech and shtick is this return to professionalism, return to functioning government.
Expertise.
And in the first 6 months, while they have put out more information, they really haven't clarified the picture for everybody in any real significant way.
Right. And information and transparency is great, but then you need the thought leaders to be able to distill that into something that's actionable for the American public, because eventually you have too much clutter and people are overwhelmed. It's like, what do we need to know? And what's the basis for this information and what matters most to me and myself and my family? And the problem is that what's getting lost is more information is getting out, like the new mask guidance. It's incredibly confusing. It seems to be backtracking, and it creates this impression and this mentality that somehow we're failing and the vaccines are not effective, which could it be further from the truth? Like, that's not the issue.
And what is the common goal that the American public is striving for to end the campaign? Who has defined the end zone? Where are the goalposts? Why is this worth putting effort to get to where? I have no idea. And the Biden administration, I thought Biden would come out and set some clear kind of goals of when we see hospitalization rates, death rates, and infection rates hit this, here are the steps that we're going to, you know, here's the steps we're going to take to get there. And then this is how everybody's life changes once we accomplish these goals. And I just get a feeling that the goalposts are constantly being shifted because nobody really knows where they are, because nobody wants to put a solid foot down because you don't know how the ground is going to shift underneath you. And it leads to where we're at right now.
And so we don't have those goalposts other than earlier in the summer when there was that, was it trying to get to 70% vaccination rate by July 4th?
We've heard that. Yep.
That was the last one, though. Yeah. There hasn't really been any update to that. And part of the problem is, too, all we're hearing now is about rising infection rates and rising hospitalization rates. But that's not always put in the context of these are unvaccinated. This is a pandemic of the unvaccinated.
Yes.
And the fact of the matter is that if you are vaccinated and you don't have any underlying conditions, you're not taking immunosuppressive drugs and you're not battling like cancer or chronic diseases like that, you are not being hospitalized. And if you do get COVID, your experience with it is going to be very mild, akin to just headaches or mild nausea that go away within a day or two. And so I've grappled with this, talking with friends and families that are like, oh my gosh, like you could still get COVID if you've been vaccinated. That's the case with many viruses and respiratory diseases. I mean, the flu, you can still get it if you've been vaccinated. But guess what? If you have the flu vaccine, your experience is going to be much more mild.
Absolutely.
And so it's like we've completely forgotten how we grapple with other diseases and how diseases and viruses spread and what the vaccine is intended to do. The intent of the vaccine isn't just to eliminate, you know, contracting COVID in the first place. It's to make the experience as mild as possible to keep you out of the hospital and keep you from dying, which is what it's doing.
And that's the key point that nobody has explained to the American people. COVID is not going away.
Right.
Unfortunately,
this is going to be with us permanently.
COVID's going to be with us just like the flu's with us.
Right.
It's going to be seasonally bad sometimes. Some years is going to be worse than the others. But right now, much like the flu, we have a vaccine for this, and we also have very effective treatments.
And and our vaccine for this is actually much more effective than the flu vaccine. So yes, it's 94% effective, but that means there are 6% that will get breakthrough cases and have mild symptoms, which we've seen. And people are freaking out. But also because the media is amplifying every breakthrough infection that happens. Even locally, you watch our local news, it's like, oh, here's another breakthrough infection. Coach Bill Self is, you know, he got vaccinated, but guess what? He's been infected. It has COVID-19. So we're hearing about everyone. So and it's creating this mentality. And I've talked with people over the last few days who are like, that's a lot of breakthrough infections. It sounds like it doesn't work at all. And everybody's getting it. I'm like, no, they're just highlighting every single breakthrough infection.
You said we are now in a pandemic of the unvaccinated. That is true. Let's play that line a few more times. We are also now in the pandemic of old folks.
Yes.
I mean, this is pretty much concentrated on people over 70 and people that are not vaccinated. I mean, this is also a pandemic of very much reduced death if you get COVID.
Completely. Yeah.
I mean, if you're even if you're not vaccinated and you get COVID, we have very effective treatments that cut down the mortality rate for COVID.
We have
COVID.
Steroid dexamethasone. Absolutely. We have Regeneron, the antibody treatment. So we have these things in place, remdesivir. So if you look at the hospitals and who they're filling up with, because most people over the age of 70, with a few exceptions like Mississippi, have been vaccinated, right? So those are not the people that are in being hospitalized now and dying. If you look at the Ozarks, for example, their hospitals that are filling up, it's younger people. It's people in their 20s, 30s, and 40s that are unvaccinated that are getting the Delta variant, which spreads much more easily. The spread rate of Delta is something like six times the spread rate of chickenpox. Like it's crazy how quickly it spreads, and the severity level is higher. And so that is what we're seeing play out now. And it's very different. And so we're not seeing the older seniors that are being hospitalized and going through this because most of them have been vaccinated and they are protected. And so, again, that's why context is key and to keep that in mind. And I feel like the response to this is something akin to panic. And we're moving in a direction where we're going to say we're going to institute new mandates on everybody, even though this is a problem with a specific segment of the population that refuses to be vaccinated. And mandates on everybody will not be successful because guess what? Those that refuse to be vaccinated are the same people who are unlikely to comply with mask mandates, comply with social distancing. So we are not going to reduce the infection rate that we're seeing because that cohort will continue to be infected. Just as we saw last year with people congregating in the Ozarks, not heeding those warnings, we're going to continue to see that. The people that will comply are the ones that really don't need to comply because those are the people that have been vaccinated.
To quote Mike McCammon, to steal a concept of his, how much political courage would it take for a major party to say COVID will never be over? And that is not the goal. The goal is never to get to zero deaths. That's not going to happen. The goal is to get this manageable like we manage other infectious diseases that we deal with every year.
Exactly.
And where we're at is about 80% there. Yep. And here's why. If you're vaccinated, I mean, why can't we do that?
I don't understand. And I give this analogy too with the flu, right? Because the flu actually has many more variants than COVID. You know, I mean, you have dozens and dozens of new flu variants every year, which is why that vaccine has to be tweaked. And then it's not always 100% effective, the flu vaccine in any given year.
No vaccine is 100% effective.
But the flu vaccine in particular is only, in some years, it's only been 30% effective because of the variants. But guess what? Even if it's only 30% effective, it reduces the chance of severe symptoms and you get mild symptoms. I always give the example in 2019, before COVID hit, I received the flu vaccine. But January 2020, I was diagnosed with the flu. I still got the flu.
Sure.
But guess what? I only had like 3 or 4 days of symptoms and I was completely fine after that. I didn't deal with the flu for a week or 2 weeks, and I credit that to the vaccine. My experience was condensed to a couple days and it was mild. That's the whole point of getting vaccinated. And I think what's also being lost in this just panic news cycle on Delta is that if you look at what's happening in the UK, which has experienced the peak before we did, it's coming down.
Because like, it burns through everybody so fast.
Right. And so that's also good news for us. And then if we look at Cape Cod Provincetown, which is where in the U.S.
We want to talk about that separately because you're right. That study is ridiculous.
We will talk about that. But that peak has also fallen. So from peak, they had 15.9% infection rate. They're down to a 5% infection rate. So that's falling too. So let's also keep in mind that as Delta surges through a community, like this isn't something that lasts very long. It has already peaked and then dropped in several places.
And I think too, there were certain data points early in the pandemic in March of last year, totally willing to accept the fact that the government, it should not say this is like the flu. I get that because it wasn't.
It wasn't. No,
and we didn't know. So there's some amount of lack of information or leaving out of context.
And I want to still say, like, it's still not the flu, and that the severity is much higher. And if you're not vaccinated, you're likely to be hospital. Like, the hospitalization rates and death rates are higher than the flu. But where it is like the flu is in the vaccination and how treatment. It protects you and treatment. Yes. And so that's what we need to keep in mind, and the fact that it will be with us permanently like the flu is.
So
it's not going to go away.
Nobody has laid any groundwork to make this pivot out of pandemic.
No.
Nobody has prepared the American people for, guys, I hate to say this, but when we get our death rate down to, right now it's about 350 people a day. That's up from where it was, I think around 250 before the Delta variant came on.
Right.
But nobody has put the work in to build enough trust or build honestly enough with the public to be able to say we are switching phases of the pandemic. Now I think the word is endemic with this. Mm-hmm. It's just like the flu, and here's how we're going to treat this. But folks, we're never going to get to a 0% rate. We're never going to eliminate all risk, but we're going to use a little bit more data to help guide some of these decisions.
It's about risk mitigation. And so the chatter you see politically is like all or nothing. So you have those on the far right that are, basically say, well, the vaccines aren't 100% effective, then we should question them completely and just, completely carry on as if nothing is happening. And then it seems like on the far left side, there's an unwillingness to just say, this is going to be around. We're going to have to go back to normal sooner than rather than later. Like the,
yes.
Going back to masking and at-home schooling is not sustainable, and that's not the right direction to go with where we're at now. We have to focus on just getting people vaccinated and realize that that has to be the focus, and then everybody else has to go back to normal. Nobody wants to say that. What we really do is for a primetime news conference, and I know that Trump saturated us with those back in 2020.
But those were just great comic gold. That's some of the best comic television ever produced.
Than we've ever seen. But we need one of those that's like, again, direct address to the American people with the experts saying, this is the new phase we're in. This is how we're going to tackle it. This is what you need to know about how long COVID's going to be around, the fact that this is going to live with us. But this is our risk mitigation strategy, because it's all about mitigation now. It's not elimination, it's mitigation.
Yes. Who does the government go to, Brandon, for that? Hey, we're going to do an hour prime time on across all networks, all streaming platforms, everything. To your point, this is the level set. We need two people that the American people would have an interest in, listen to, and at least somewhat trust, maybe out of the question, but at least would be open to what they say. The first two people that popped into my mind are Tom Hanks and The Rock.
Yeah. Who doesn't love Tom Hanks, right?
True. But that's a silly response to who has enough credibility to go on camera and tell the American people, I'm going to explain this year and a half that we're in is changing, and I'm here to explain it to you.
Yeah.
Who's going to do that?
I don't know. Yeah.
Because that person's immediately a giant asshole to half the country.
Right.
You're hated just for even making the attempt at some point.
But it has to be done, because without that, the void is filled by just the media and the pronouncements from the CDC, which are confusing at best. And it's really remarkable to me, because I've seen statements online from epidemiologists and some of the top physicians around the country who are now saying, like, the CDC isn't helping. Like, they're just adding to the confusion at this point. And these doctors are frustrated because they feel that the CDC in many ways is counterproductive now.
So it feels like the teachers union is gearing up for another big fight in August. And I think there's a couple pieces of data that have not been put out into the public ether that was not appropriate in the earlier parts of the pandemic, but is appropriate now. For example, if you are under 18, I want to say this number is correct. I think 337 people of under the age of 18 has died of COVID.
Right.
All 337s are an absolute tragedy. Anytime a young life gets cut short, that is a tragedy, and we should all acknowledge that.
Right.
At the same time, more kids have died of pneumonia. So what is the level? So are we saying we're going to mask? Are we going to have this fight again about masks and even in-person school when you go to what the absolute worst response is, death? The number, the data is just not there. This is not a pandemic of people under 18.
No, it isn't.
It's just simply not. And we know that now. But are we going to go at each other again over school? schools?
Well, and so even before we knew that last year, there was valid concern, even if that wasn't the case, that somebody under 18 could contract it and give it to a teacher or a staff administrator
who would be a vaccine teacher.
Well, that's exactly why this is no longer an issue, right? Because everybody has the opportunity to be vaccinated. So there's no reason that that's a concern.
If the teacher has a vaccine and wears an N95 mask, what are their odds of getting COVID?
Well, and so that's why that was a concern last year. It's not now.
It's
not. We have vaccines, so that's not a concern.
I never thought we would get this. Well, yeah, I did. There are several things in the country that we need the problem more than we need the solution.
Yeah.
Gun control is one of them. Each side lobbies off of it, raises money off of it, fires up their base off of it. Abortion is another one.
Well, and it's very cynical and dark, but gun control, abortion, immigration, I mean, I have come to view those issues through the lens of, you know, there's no desire by people in those both parties to solve that, because it keeps the fundraising spigot open. It keeps a campaign issue alive that they can run on, because you solve those issues, it takes a lot away from those who have the most to gain and benefit.
And I guess now the Rubicon that I've crossed is there's nothing that we won't put into that category.
No.
And politically, I mean, it's pretty clear that the Democrats want to make this an issue as long as they can, because it goes in their favor.
Yeah.
And Republicans are just going to use this to beat the culture war with.
Right.
And at the end of the day, what does that get us? How long does this go? I mean, how long are we going to have these debates around masking and vaccination? It feels like we've got another 2 years to complain about this until something. I'm just trying to figure out where is the goalpost? What is the end of this?
Right. And by not having that, I think, again, you're going to just, I think, anger people more and cause more people to become disillusioned and to not listen to you at all.
Yeah.
So people start tuning out if there isn't a clear sense of where we're headed, what direction we're trying to go. Because last year, people, for the most part, again, you had many that were exceptions to that and acted out, but a large number of people were willing to adhere to the guidelines and do what they need to do, with the idea that there's a goal here and this is temporary. Yeah. And we're going to get through this. But now, if we don't know that this is temporary and there's no indication of when it'll end, people aren't going to be motivated to follow
along. And
what's the goal? Right.
I mean, I have to wear a mask because somebody won't get vaccinated. Okay. Maybe. I don't know.
There's always going to be that perception, and this is how I feel too. Like, we've given every opportunity. Those people can get vaccinated.
Absolutely.
Why is it my fault? Why do I have to sacrifice because somebody won't do what they should, when I went through a whole year last year of sacrificing for the greater good, when we were all in the same boat together?
That person's making a personal choice on their health.
Right.
If they choose to do that, why does that impact me? If for some reason you choose not to get the vaccine, great. You just have to live with the consequences of that.
Yeah.
I chose to get it. If we're saying that my path or my consequences are no different than somebody who didn't get the vaccine, that's a massive error in messaging and how they've sold the vaccination process to the American people.
Right.
Because America is the only country with the scientific knowledge to create an effective vaccine against this. The shit the Chinese put out, even countries in Asia are like, no thanks, we'll wait for the Pfizer and Moderna
shipment. Russian vaccine was a flop. I mean,
you want to roll your sleeve up for that?
Yeah.
We are the only country in the world that can produce an effective vaccine. We are one of the only companies, coupled with our scientific knowledge, have the ability to produce a dose for every person in this country.
Right, which is amazing.
And we have the economic might to do it for free.
Yep.
And we have the distribution system to get it to everybody. We are light years ahead. This is, if you want to know American exceptionalism and greatness, I just fucking explained it to you. And we're going to throw it all away, or we're not going to reach the, because of this?
It's so frustrating.
I don't get it.
Other countries that are so far behind and are willing to do anything and everything to get a vaccine just to get back to some semblance of normal.
We should have put this behind us and be all over Africa, where China is making loans and building hospitals and roads.
Yeah.
You've said this before. Compliments of the people of the United States of America should be on every, we should be shipping billions of vaccines vaccinations worldwide.
Right.
And we're just missing such an opportunity just due to our own ignorance.
Well, talk about such a great use of our soft power, quote unquote, yeah. soft power influence, being able to do that and create goodwill. And instead, again, China has been doing this for years now, but they have really started swooping in, and it's a missed opportunity for us. And it's just another example of how China is going to have that geopolitical influence that we're going to be wishing we had down the line.
Everybody's focusing on China right now. Hasn't this pandemic proved to everybody, if America ends, it will be by our own hand.
Yeah.
It won't be by a foreign power.
No.
I mean, the Chinese are not going to invade America and occupy us and make us a colony.
They know we're our own worst China. Enemy. I mean,
we'll just give us some time.
We'll do it to ourselves.
Yeah. It feels like we're in the process of doing it now.
Yeah.
So Monday, mask mandate hits in KC again. This is if Governor Hehaw doesn't make some sort of law quickly that bans mask mandates. I think Florida has already done this. Texas has already done this.
Yeah.
That's right up Parsons Alley. So, I mean, maybe something with that. I mean, am I going to wear a mask? Yeah, I'll put my mask in my car. If I go into a store or whatever, I'll put it on. Am I going to be as religious about it as I was before? No, I'm not. I mean, before, walking into a gas station, you didn't have it on, you stopped, you walked back to the car, stuff like that. I'm not going to do that. What do you think the overall percentage of people, especially in Missouri, do you think is going to actually remask?
Oh, I think it'll be under 50%.
I would be,
30 to 40, maybe. I don't think it's going to be high. I mean, it's already been a problem. I think if you correlate it to the vaccination rates in Missouri, which are below the national average, I think it'll be similar to those if you would overlay it.
And you passed around an article with about the gentleman who was in Southern Missouri who refused to get the vaccine. And
this was actually national news AP. So this was a 31-year-old father of four, husband who was hospitalized, refused to get vaccinated, put on a ventilator, had to say his last goodbyes to his kids and family. Still alive, thankfully, but not out of the woods. He's still in the hospital. It's been several weeks. There's still fear that he could relapse and still not pull through. But it's an example of where this goes. I mean, and again, people that are young and think they're invincible, they're not. And I think for me personally, the worst thing, like being put on a ventilator is awful. And I think anybody who just kind of shrugs that off, like look that up online in the process.
Yeah.
Like not it's like uncomfortable is an understatement. Like it's painful, and it is something where you have lasting effects for many months
if you want to know what it feels like, lay down on the floor, open your mouth, and let one of your kids try to jab a straw down your throat.
Right. Except we're talking about something that's wider than a straw, and it's mechanical, and it stays in your throat, and so you're breathing with the help of this artificial device.
If you like that and you think that's no big deal, go outside and get the hose and let them try to shove that down your throat. Because that's about what it's going to be. What I think of that guy, I certainly hope physically that gentleman makes a full recovery.
Me too.
Unfortunately, though, if he does, he is going to face a mountain of medical bills coming out of that. If for no other reason to the great people of Missouri to take the vaccine, just take it to avoid a potential visit to the hospital, which could ruin you financially.
Oh, yeah.
Well, there's so many reasons to do it.
There's some discussion now among insurance carriers, like not covering hospital bills or treatments for people that are unvaccinated is kind of an incentive, like you should get vaccinated, because if you don't and this happens, you're going to be on the hook completely. Yeah. Like we're not going to even cover, you know, partial.
I think that's somewhat fair.
Yeah.
Brandon, you probably don't hang around a lot of 19-year-old boys.
No, I don't.
I have a 19-year-old son. And unless you have a 19-year-old son, there's really no need to hang around 19-year-old boys because they're pretty useless. We were having a discussion.
We've all been that age. Yeah,
we are. And for boys, too, you're just learning how to communicate. So there's a lot of puffery and over the topness and stuff as you kind of figure out what your style is going to be. And I was having a conversation with my son about vaccination, and he's against forced vaccination. And he made a very kind of of strong case to why he was against forced vaccination. After we got off the phone, I did send him his vaccination record just to let you know, my son, you have been vaccinated 13 times already by government mandated vaccines.
Right.
And the government mandated vaccine, 39 times we've stuck a needle in you and injected you with something because the government said we should and that we had to send you to public school. So for everybody out there standing on that anti-vax ground, 99% of them probably already have gone through several mandated
vaccinations. And why do people so easily forget that? It's just astounding to me that people just kind of write that off and act like this is a first.
Correct.
No, this is not something that's novel. I mean, you've gone through this. A good example is the military. There was actual discussion about whether or not mandated the military. The military is already mandated not only to get the vaccines that you and I have to get, but more vaccines above that. I mean, I forget the number, but it's staggering because you have to think they travel extensively too. So they have to get vaccines.
You probably had to get some vaccinations updated when you went to Europe last time.
I did. Yeah.
So I want to say forced, but mandated vaccination has been a part of our lives for decades.
Decades. Yeah.
Washington in the war, the Revolutionary War, forced soldiers to get a smallpox vaccination.
That's right.
And I'm pretty sure what they did is like cut a dude open, put some blood in it and, you know, got some crude syringe and shoved it in you. And a lot of those people died. The rabbit hole I'm going down is I just don't get it. This argument about being forced to take a vaccination.
Well, no, because there have been medical treatments that have been required, like you said, since the beginning of our republic. There's been measures that have been in place for containment. I mean, I talked about during the smallpox outbreak back in the late 1780s into 1790s, where, you know, there was quarantine that happened to remind people that none of this is new. But people seem to just like forget history completely. And they have to be reminded of it all the time.
I have the same response to when somebody comes out very strong libertarian. You should move to Somalia.
Yeah.
Move to Somalia where there's no government.
Right.
There's no government to tell you a single thing to do. There's no really functioning society. If you can fight off, I mean, you can become king. You can make your own warlord. You can make your own rules. But if you're going to live in a civilized society, there's some baseline rules that we're all going to have to follow.
So the aspect of this that's really just, I think, driving me nuts right now is the people on Facebook that I interacted with, a woman who wanted to know what our elected officials are going to do about employers that are requiring vaccination or positive COVID tests. She's like, we need the government to step in and stop this and hold these employers to account. I'm like, you do realize that Kansas is a right to work state.
Sure.
And Republican philosophy has long been predicated on employers being able to set requirements for work and for their employees. And now you want to go completely against this. But guess what? The federal law is actually on the side of employers. If they want to mandate a vaccine, they can. Yes.
So are we saying that you can't require a college education or certain technical certifications anymore? I mean, those discriminate against people that don't have them.
Right. And so I think, I mean, in hospitals, I think can easily do this. I saw a statistic that there's 40% of employees at nursing homes that still aren't vaccinated, which
is New York, 40% of the
after everything that happened
in New York, the epicenter of this.
And we know that last year it was these employees that directly killed the people that were in the nursing homes and in the facilities.
We were warming up. We talked about there are some key pieces of data the government has never put together for people. For example, what does the death toll look like minus nursing homes?
Yeah,
that might look really different. We've heard that pre-existing conditions are a major factor in dying of COVID.
Yep.
Have you ever seen a list put out by the CDC of what the most dangerous?
No, that's a good example. I was digging for that last year to see, and I was only able to put together information from just anecdotal experiences that people came forward and said, I had this and I was fine, but I had this and almost died. But why doesn't the CDC put a list of those? Do you know this came to a head early on this spring when the vaccines were being made available and you had different states that had the tiers, you know, when you could get vaccinated? And several states like Missouri had a tier. If you have pre-existing conditions, this set of conditions, you're eligible. And I started calling around to find out and ask has to get like, and most of the pharmacists and most of the doctors didn't know the nuances involved. They're like, I don't know this. It's kind of ambiguous. Well, I'm like, does this condition qualify? Well, it's technically on the list, but we don't know why. Like there was no, I mean, the list seems like it was just put together randomly.
When's the last time you saw a breakdown of deaths and hospitalizations by age?
Yeah, I had a long time.
Have you ever seen it cross tabulated by age and comorbidity?
Nope.
That could bring a lot of clarity to this. My point here is that I understand why some of that data was left out of the narrative in the early days.
Right.
When you just don't know what's happening. We're past that now. So why aren't we educating the public more on who's being affected, how they're being affected, and long term, this is our plan of how we're going to live with COVID.
Yeah.
And again, it feels like on both sides of this, both camps, both political parties have entrenched with there's more political juice to squeeze out of this.
And that's why they don't want to give any of that up. So nope. We're in the stalemate. Yeah.
No. Nope. God, do we have anything else we want to talk about COVID? Let's talk about the...
I think we've covered COVID.
Do you want to briefly want to go over some of the numbers at the Providence Party? Because I think people just would enjoy hearing that. Because like this is the main incident that is causing this remasking in these hotspots.
It is
across that. This is one of the main vectors of data the CDC used to come up with this guidance. And I'm stalling for time here as Brandon pulls it up. But as you go through this, you're going to scratch your head a couple of times and say, what?
Yeah. And I put together a post because this was driving me crazy because this is what's been used by the CDC to now recommend mask mandates again. So Provincetown, Cape Cod, the tip of the Massachusetts Cape gets a lot of seasonal visitors throughout the summer, over 60,000 plus. So that's where there was a recent outbreak, and there was a number of those who contracted COVID that were found to be vaccinated, what they're calling the breakthrough cases. And there were enough of these people that it created this alarm that, oh my gosh, the vaccine is somehow not as effective as we thought, and we need to go back to full masking. But again, the detail that was left out is really what matters here. So there were 833 people total that tested positive in Provincetown, Massachusetts. Only 7 of those were hospitalized, 0 died out of 833. Keep that in mind. 833, too, out of usually there's more than 60,000 in a typical summer, 60 to 100,000 people descend upon Cape Cod. So again, keep that in mind, knowing that there's a 94% effectiveness rate of the vaccine, 6% breakthrough cases. So the CDC releases this study that shows over 50% positivity in vaccinated people from what they were able to measure in Provincetown. The problem with this study is that it's incomplete because they only accounted for the first 469 people in the cluster, the infection cluster. And so those were the only ones that the agency had time to study. So they stopped at 469 and then said, well, we were able to analyze 469 infections. We found that over 50% of them were in previously vaccinated people, which we're calling breakthrough cases. But they stopped. So they stopped at less than half of the total number who tested positive. So it's not even a representative sample, and it's not statistically significant because of that. But yet they still released the study. Why would you release the study and create this sense of panic when it's not complete and you just chose, you know, the first, you know, handful of people? So of the 346 people out of that 800 some that had breakthrough infection rates, almost all of them reported only minor symptoms, such as cough or headache.
Just like I got a little case of the flu.
Right. And there were only 2 that went to the hospital. And those 2 had underlying conditions for which they were on immunosuppressive drugs.
That makes me crazy.
That's really kind of where you're at with this. So again, you lack all the context. And the local officials in Massachusetts and Provincetown are saying, well, you know, this isn't as serious as this is being made out to be. Yet the national narrative on this is that that this somehow indicates that the vaccines are not doing what they should when they are, and that somehow we need to institute a global mask mandate again. And I'll also add, too, that where is it? So the Delta infection seems to just spread very rapidly through a community or region, and then it dissipates pretty quickly. So we're already already seeing it fall in the UK. It's receding. And then even in Cape Cod, at the height of when this was measured around July 4th, they were at 15.9% positivity rate, and now they're at just 5% within the last few days.
Because it just burns through everybody so fast.
And it's gone. So again, this isn't something that lasts either. So it's also something that officials would be mindful of. But instead, it's being used for justification that is now giving, voice to vaccine skeptics to say, see, we should have got the vaccine. It's not working. No, it is working. And it really, positivity rates don't even matter. And I wish the media would even report on breakthrough cases.
We don't. Yes. Do we report on how many people have tested positive for the flu every year?
No.
Here's an example of a CNBC tweet and headline that the headline doesn't support the facts in the article.
Oh, I love these.
Here's one. Breakthrough COVID cases. At least 125,000 fully vaccinated Americans have tested positive for coronavirus. That's the headline. That's the tweet. That's the bait to get you to click on the story. Now, here's some facts. Let me figure out how to work my phone here. From the actual story, okay? The 125,000 breakthrough cases in 38 states found by NBC News represents less than 0.08% of the 164 million plus people who have been fully vaccinated since January.
I was just going to do that math
or
until you said
one
that.
One in every 13,000 people.
See, that's even less.
I'm sorry, 1,300. I apologize. 1,300
that's
people.
That's even less than the 94%,
correct.
6% rate of the vaccine.
And then if you read to the next paragraph, you get this little gem. Health officials continue to caution that breakthrough cases were expected, comma, extremely rare, and not a sign of vaccine failure.
So why is it that in the headline?
Why didn't we lead with, the headline could have been, look how great the vaccines work.
Right. And instead, the headline doesn't offer any context, right? You just see a big number, 125,000 breakthrough cases. You're like, oh my gosh.
So here's the alternative headline. Breakthrough COVID cases, fewer than 8 out of 10,000 among the 164 million vaxxed, extremely rare.
There's your
instead,
headline.
It's, oh my God, there's 125,000 people have COVID and they're going to die. It's just, I don't.
Well, and it feeds into what we're seeing with the media reporting on each and every breakthrough case. If it's someone who's a celebrity or an athlete, we're hearing about it. If it's somebody local, we're hearing about it. It's, and again, it creates the perception that it's a larger issue than it is.
And I am terrible at math. Most Americans are not good at math. I understand baseline statistics, high end statistical stuff. That ain't my gig.
Right.
But I know if I get the vaccine and I'm 0.08 is my percentage chance of, I'm going to play those odds every single time.
Yeah.
And who can explain this to folks? Who can walk people through this? I just think we're out of people that the public trust, and institutional trust is at an all time low. I don't know what the CDC is thinking, but they've got to get a handle on themselves pretty quickly.
And at some point anyway, we need to have like a review of everything that happened leading up to the pandemic, because the CDC, I think, is responsible and faces a lot of blame for, if you remember early on, the lack of COVID tests, like getting them out to the clinics and hospitals.
Because we wanted to do our own.
Right. And then that was botched. Remember how those tests were not working as they should, and they had to recall all of them, and they had no plan for getting new ones. Like, that whole effort needs to be investigated, and that ship needs to be righted at some point, because that wasn't only a blunder. That was completely embarrassing for our country on the international stage to have to deal with that. And the fact is that you had doctors that were trying to get tests internationally because our CDC test was just junk.
Terrible.
Yeah.
Brandon, I think you've got uncle duties today, don't you?
I do. Said? Yeah, I have an event I have to get to.
So let's end with the January 6th commission, because that was some hard testimony to hear. When I was driving around, I think on Mondays when they kicked off and they had the four Capital City police officers testify, there were certainly some times of that was really kind of gut-wrenching to listen to those men tell that story.
Yeah, and I think it was very sobering. It was very, and you could feel and hear the pain in their voices and as they cried. And then also just the feeling of, as they felt, indifference by so many in the political class that are unwilling to acknowledge this. Typically people that are always, you know, back the blue, but this time it didn't fit their narrative and it puts them crosswise with the Trump base. So they're willing to just completely downplay it or mock it. And it was, I think there were details here that I didn't even know, officers describing how they almost had their eyes gouged out, one who had the tip of his finger sliced off, Officer Fanone, who talked about how he was electrocuted multiple times with taser devices. So you had all of this going on, and he was fearful for his life, as many of them were at some point. And then, you know, they've continued to face blowback and hate. Officer Fanone played a voicemail. I was actually on Charlie Sykes' podcast.
I saw that.
I played from a Trump supporter calling him names and just berating him.
How about the black officer who just got racial
being called the N-word multiple times over and over again?
So while I think that testimony is important to hear, and it is context that I think everybody needs to understand how violent this was. And I think that testimony was in direct response to Republicans in Congress talking about this was a tour and this was no big deal. I think it was appropriate to lay that testimony out to kind of get past that narrative and to let people understand how violent of an act this was.
Yeah,
I'm down with that. Okay, when are we going to learn anything new? Because if this turns into 3 weeks of just replaying that, I don't see what we get out of this.
Well, and there's several things. There's the security failures and security lapse component that needs to be addressed. There's also being able to come out of this with, we're going to make sure this never happens again, and this is how.
True.
Like, we need to have some type of, and what about, and I think we don't know the answers to this yet, but looking at the possible culpability of members of Congress who led some of these people into the Capitol the day before, who were chummy with them,
Is it
Paul Gosar who actually has said now that he wore body armor on that day?
I think so.
And I'll double check this.
I think Mo Brooks did too.
I'm sorry, it's Mo Brooks. Okay, not Paul Gosar. Okay. I misspoke. Mo Brooks.
Both equal idiots, by the way.
And these are both people that were part of the big lie, right? They were there fanning the flames. And so you wonder, it's like, okay, if he's going to wear body armor, clearly he thought that things were going to get pretty out of hand.
But this is a television show. This is theater. There's one character in this whole narrative that everybody's interested in, Trump.
Yep.
What did he know?
When did he know?
What actions did he take? If you're not ready to go at that, why are we here?
Yeah.
Because those things that you talked about are important, but if we're waiting out what we want to learn,
Trump
80% is Trump. And if we're not going to tackle that, why are we
here?
He's
the 500-pound elephant in the room. And we do need to tackle it. But I do, and that's why I think that regardless of what happens, this needed to happen, because I can't imagine that we would allow 1/6 to pass and not have any type of major investigation into it. Ideally, we would have had a 9/11 style bipartisan independent commission, which McCarthy shot down. So now we have to do, you know, this is the best, which is partisan. But I don't know. We need to get to the heart of that. We need to get to the heart of Trump. I think Liz Cheney laid out the case the other day when she was asked point blank, you know, why this was needed. And she kind of went into the, you know, requirements behind this. I think it'll be really telling now. There's calls for her and Kinzinger to be expelled from the Republican conference.
I want to know, where's your subpoena list?
Yeah.
That will tell me how serious about this you are.
I agree. We need that.
Because you don't go down this route and half-ass it. If you're not going to take a shot at Trump, just hit the eject button and move on.
Yeah, subpoena Mark Meadows, who was there that day.
Jim Jordan, all of them. If you're not going balls deep, what's the point? Because what you're doing is you're handing a victory to Trump.
Right.
See, look, they didn't even call me. How serious could it be? I mean, they're mad at me for what? They had a chance to subpoena me. They didn't do that. I just think there's...
And I know the Democrats that are on that select committee have kind of danced around that in terms of whether or not Trump or other people will be called. But no, they need to be called. And this needs to be taken seriously. And so don't hold back.
Yeah.
And that's,
if you're not going great guns, why are we here?
Yeah.
If you don't make an attempt to get Mark Meadows, Jim Jordan, Mike Pence, and Donald Trump on the witness stand under oath, what is the point of this exercise?
Right.
I just can't calculate anymore. What are people thinking? What is the purpose for this? I don't know. You say you got to get out of here like 2:45.
I do. Right. So I think before is a close.
Yeah.
So before we log off, I just wanted to touch on a couple of things that just media wise reading. I know we kind of do this at the end, what's going through. So awesome podcast I listened to recently was Edith. I don't know if you've heard about that. It's like a 6-episode podcast. It's a dramatization of Edith Wilson, so the first lady, wife of Woodrow Wilson, about the moment in time when Woodrow Wilson suffered a stroke and she took over
America's
duties.
First female president.
Most people don't know this.
Probably
yes.
Edith Wilson.
I mean, she was calling the shots and dictating everything behind the scenes. Yeah. And most people don't know that story. So she was, so this is how that happened, and it chronicles everything that went on. And it has some great voice talents as well. It has the vocals. So the actress who plays Edith is, gosh, I'm blanking on her name. The main actress in Gone Girl.
Rosamund Pike?
Yes, Rosalind Pike, who does Edith Wilson brilliantly.
She's kind of English too, isn't she?
Her accent doesn't really come out in this. So she does a great job. She has a uncanny ability to play, I think, characters that are devious. You know, there was not only Gone Girl, but I Care a Lot on Netflix. Rosamund Pike played
that. I had to turn that off because like, Jesus Christ, does this actually happen?
But that movie was crazy good. Though.
And she looked like a raging psychopath that entire film.
Oh, yeah. And then the guy who plays, does the voice for Woodrow Wilson is the guy that played Agent S.H.I.E.L.D. in the Marvel movies.
Oh,
I'm blanking out on his name. You know who I'm talking about.
Yeah, I know it is. Yeah.
But it's really well done. It's dramatization form. So it's like, you know, watching a movie but listening to it.
Yeah.
And it's a good piece of American history that was kind of kept under wraps for many decades.
Yeah.
So
I'll recommend it. I'll do a quick podcast plug. This is not politics. This isn't history. This is just light and fluffy. Finding Richard Simmons. It's a 6-part podcast. Really easy to listen to. Richard Simmons just disappeared.
Yeah,
I heard about
this podcast coming out. Nobody knows what happened.
And it's really, really good because it ends really, really well. I won't spoil it for you, but it's light. It's easy to listen to. It's fun. It's interesting. And it will make you think a little bit about celebrity when it ends. So if you just want something just to fill your ears and not think, it's a really good podcast.
Okay.
Yeah. All right, cool. So you've got where are you uncle dutying? Are you taking somewhere specific?
Yeah, so it's this Casey Curiosities and Oddities Expo.
Okay.
So it's basically everything from like shrunken heads to things found in the Amazon, and it's all going to be at the Casey Convention Center, set up kind of booth style where you go wander to these exhibits and vendors, and I've never been, so I don't really have any idea what to expect, but we'll see. Hopefully my nephew will like it.
That's our shorter hour. Thanks, Brandon.
Thanks, Craig.
Thanks for listening to 2 Men in the Middle. Make sure to give us a 5-star review wherever you get your podcasts. Check out our website at 2meninthemiddle.com. Drop us an email at 2meninthemiddle@gmail.com or tweet at us at 2meninthemiddle. We'll see you next week.